Welcome back to Such Fun, a podcast devoted to the discussion, education, and celebration of all things visiting. I am Big Bug Geek.
I'm Jazz Mataz, and today we are joined by the lovely, the one and only, fresh from Melbourne, Josh HRD. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Welcome, boys. Welcome to Conversation for the Land Down Under. And, oh, damn my kangaroo, I need to put him back in his pen once again. No. All jokes. Here we apparently fist upside down, so they tell me. I don't know. It looks all the right way up to me.
Have you ever fisted upside down?
Upside down? Well, I mean, what do you mean? Like, all your back is upside down, right?
Well, haven't you got like a scaffolding thing going on?
I do have scaffolding. So I don't enjoy getting fisted in a sling. I feel all like collapsed in on myself, and I like to be quite active when I'm bottoming, and I feel like I on scaffolding I can sort of push back against a top in kind of this very, very lovely way. And so I do have scaffolding. It was much cheaper than a sling. I'll let you know that as well, because it's not marketed to gays.
Yeah, they're fucking expensive.
Scaffolding, everybody. It's where it's at. And you're a doctor, so everybody trust the doctor.
That's true. We apparently know anatomy, so I've been told.
This is the series of the doctor. That's really the doctor's having a real comeback this year with us.
Yep. It's a turn on. Yes.
But we're not here to talk medical with
No, you. We're not. No, we're not. No.
No, we're here to talk about shame.
Shame.
Yeah, we thought we'd brighten up everyone's day by making you all feel terrible. No, I'm joking.
Yeah. Hmm. Gay shame, kink shame, fish shame. We're here to shame everyone, really.
Not bottom shaming. No bottom shaming. That's on the next episode.
That's another episode.
Let's start by having you tell us your story.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm really glad I got the chance to come on and have a chat with you guys. We were meant to do this last year, but things got a bit too chaotic for me and I had to pull out last minute. But I really wanted to come on and share a story, because I get a lot of messages from guys and sort of all sorts of queer people saying, like, thank you for making some of the videos that you do. I feel like because of sort of seeing you play with toys, I felt more comfortable coming around to it myself. I've even started making videos. There's been a few people who've sort of messaged and said, I've had a lot of issues talking with my partner about interest in fisting and toys. And because of kind of seeing some of the stuff you've done and that it's fun and colourful and has made me feel more comfortable talking about some of this stuff with my partner. And I love getting those kinds of messages, but there's a bit of a story behind me and toys and fisting. And for a lot of people, it comes as a bit of a surprise to learn that fisting was not something that I felt comfortable with for a very, very long time. I won't give you my entire life story, but I grew up Roman Catholic in regional Australia. I didn't really know any gay people at all in the first 17 years of my life. And I thought for a long time I would not be able to live my life openly as a gay man, and had resigned myself to kind of a future of becoming a priest and being in the clergy, and that was going to be my future. And thankfully, I woke up and came to my senses.
I was going to say, you would have made a really hot priest.
Oh, thank you, darling. Thank you. I don't really know what... No, I don't think I want to entertain that thought, my God. When I was like an early teenager, I played with my toy like anyone else. I think the first thing I got in my hole or used as like a regular dildo was like a Maglite torch. Very kind of rough surface. I think there was a condom involved. But it felt really good. I enjoyed playing with my hole. I shoved all sorts of kind of weird and wonderful household objects up there. And then kind of forgot about it for a really long time. And in my early 20s, I was involved in kind of two long-term monogamous relationships, and I think had very much settled on the idea of being a white picket fence, heteronormative homosexual, is kind of how I would describe my life. And was pretty miserable kind of over that time. And one at one point, my ex and I ended up doing long distance for a few years, and I got a dildo for the first time when I was about, I don't know, 25, 26, something like that. And it wasn't big. It wasn't big, but it was bigger than my partner's dick. And the very first time, and it was soft too, like, what you know, the dual density kind of sex shop dildos, not the hard PVC ones. The first time I used it, it had the stretch to it that I hadn't really experienced before, and it felt so good. And it felt so good to use something that was bigger than what my hole was used to. And over the next couple of years, I began to play and experiment with toys. But I didn't feel like it was something I could talk to my partner about, and I didn't think it was anything I could talk to anyone else about. And I sort of
How old were you at this point?
I would have been, I was trying to think, I would have been, I think it, like, circa 27 or thereabouts, when kind of this was happening. So 27, 28. And
how old are you now? If you
don't mind? 31 now. So not that long.
Right.
And I would accumulate toys a little, over a few months. Not kind of the super expensive silicone ones, but sex shop ones that are, you know, they still cost a fair amount of money. And I would play with them. And every time I would be done or I would come, I would have this overwhelming feeling of shame that I was doing something horrendously wrong, that I was doing something nasty and dirty, and I needed to stop this right away. And I used to keep my toys hidden in like a bag underneath the house where my ex kind of wouldn't find them in any chance when he was back home. And every few months, the shame would get so bad that I would pick up all of the toys that I had, throw them away into landfill, and tell myself I was never, ever going to do this again. And several months would go by, and I would begin to get some urges to get more toys, and one toy would come and another toy would come. I didn't go into like a sex shop because God forbid the shame of walking into somewhere and buying a dildo. And it would have been, I think, at least four times that I threw away a bunch of dildos. I contributed significantly to Melbourne's landfill problem through throwing away all these dicks. And Eventually, we stopped doing long distance, and I had some toys hidden under the house by that point that I had stopped throwing away, thankfully. And it was relatively about that period I got my first silicone toy, which was the Top Toys Gatekeeper 85 and 100. And the texture of the silicone toy was next level delightful and wonderful. And I can still remember being in the shower the first time I got the Gatekeeper 100 in my hole, because it didn't go in easily. You know, it was a bit of a battle there where I was kind of stretching my hole, and it went in, and I just ejaculated everywhere instantly. And it was kind of this magical moment for me where it was, I think I want to keep doing this. And by that point, I'd given myself the goal of wanting to be able to fist myself. While I was playing with toys, I can remember I was never into fisting to begin with. It just was toys. And I was watching toy porn on XTube. And I still remember the first time, like, a fisting clip auto-played while I was playing. And the first time I was watching a fisting video going, fuck, this is hot. I want to do this. Learned to fist myself long before anyone else did. But still felt like I couldn't talk with my partner about this. And we had a lot of problems, but eventually it kind of came up a few months before we broke up. And I had so much shame about the toys that I had, that I wanted to stretch my hole, that I wanted to be fisted. And he wasn't into it at all. It just didn't interest him. And it was something that I was really keen to explore, but the whole fisting community was, It was like kind of when I was a gay kid again. And you know that there's a queer community out there, but you don't feel part of it. And even when I moved to Melbourne, I didn't really integrate into the queer community in any way. It was sort of like, well, that's something that I'm not a part of. And when we broke up, I kind of thought that I didn't know if I would ever get to a point of feeling comfortable playing with anyone else ever. And that maybe kind of my life was going to be just sitting on toys at home alone. It sounds really sad when I bundle it all up like that, but I had so much shame about all of this that I felt incredibly isolated. Some time went by and I met a few people, and it was early 2020 when I started posting videos. And I remember seeing a guy on ToyPix who had made some quite gorgeous like toy videos, and it was sort of this feeling of I kind of want to make something like that. And some of the toy companies also ran programs where they would send you a dildo if you got like 1,000 views on XTube. And I was like, well, maybe I'll do that. They're expensive. And that was kind of where it all started for me. But it was a journey of years to get to a point where I felt comfortable with my desire to stretch and play with my whole, and B, get to a point where I felt comfortable exploring this with other people. And I think that's probably a good starting spot for us all to kind of have a bit of a chat about gay shame, about queer shame, and about some of the shame that maybe we have about our kinks, that maybe we don't talk about. Because often, so I don't know what your guys' thoughts were, but it might be a good jumping spot for us to start.
Well, I really want to go back to that moment that you talked about, which you experienced a few times, of that overwhelming, before you were out and proud as a fister, as it were.
Yeah.
That feeling of playing on the toys, having yeah. amazing time stretching hold, and then as soon as you'd come or whatever, then that overwhelming feeling of shame and that feeling of I have to purge this as well. So I just kind of want to like pinpoint that. What was going through your head? Like follow that thought through.
Yeah.
And also, well, what were you hoping to achieve by throwing the toy collections out?
Well, I was trying to get rid of any desire to do this again, or trying to put up barriers to make sure that I wouldn't. I don't know if you boys ever experienced when I first began to learn to masturbate and jack off, I had a similar experience where every time I would come, it felt like I had done something wrong. And it was...
Sure. I remember that.
Yeah. Like, remember?
Yeah.
And it kind of was like that beginning to discover yourself, but also there was something very strange about masturbation for me where it felt like I was doing something unnatural, that I was doing something that was bad, that I was...
Because as a Catholic, I guess, every sperm is sacred. I guess there's an extra level there, right?
Apparently. Like, I don't know why, because if you don't fucking do it yourself, then you're just going to end up having wet dreams everywhere, and that's just a total waste of cum. But
how old were you when you started masturbating? Well, how old were you?
12?
12. I was 10.
I think I might have been 9 or 10. I remember when I first discovered masturbation, I wasn't... When I would come, I wouldn't ejaculate. It just would be the orgasm with, like, dry orgasms for a while before anything else happened.
Same.
But with the toys, there was this...
Wait a second, wait. Who did you masturbate to first? / what idea did you masturbate to?
I think...
Mine was J-Lo.
Oh, God. No, I was feeling very gay by the time I discovered masturbation. So I think it was mostly kind of like boys at school I thought about, to be truthful. I don't remember kind of having any other dreamboats, in my memory. How about you, BBG?
Yeah, I was kind of naive, really. I don't know how I kept leaving things on the computer. I really don't know. I don't know what she was fishing around for.
Ooh.
No, I think it was porn. I think that was probably, you know, family computer, that sort of thing. Mother definitely discovering it more than a few times on the computer. It's like, we're not going to talk about this, but I just want it all gone by the end of today. You're like, okay.
I was such a nerd. I was obsessed with like deleting cookies and deleting all this weird stuff. And I remember, I remember like finding other stuff from other family members on the computer that was a bit of a shock.
Good times.
Anyway, speaking of fishing around. When I was fishing around in my hole, the stretch was such a good sensation for me, and I don't know if it was, you know, I felt so particular about it because it was that anxious boy first time really discovering vagal nerve stimulation, whether that played into it quite a bit as well. But every time I would finish, or come or like stop playing, I would look around with like fear as though what the fuck have I done? I've done it again. Because it felt like I was doing something against what my body was made for. It felt like I was doing something that was dirty and wrong, and that it was kind of like this abhorrent feature against nature to like want to stretch out my hole in this way.
Well you've hit on something there, because this is a thing that's used against us a lot as queer people, in particular gay sex. Like, you're doing something unnatural, you're doing something that the body was not designed for. This is sort of weaponized against us a lot and used to kind of inflict shame on us as well. And I find a lot of our adult life is spent like combating that and sort of finding sort of mechanisms and coping mechanisms against, you know, heteronormativity or, you know, anyone that wants to sort of shame us for this as well. And I guess that's amplified very much with fisting as well. Because even from within, you know, the gay queer community is like, oh my God, oh, that's disgusting. Yeah. That's not right. You can't be doing that to yourself as well. So we get it externally, we get it internally.
We've been doing a really good job at undoing that, though, within the gay community these days.
I like to think so.
Like, we've come a long way.
Yeah, I mean, we used to really, like, I mean, you know, forget fisting aside, you know, just a lot of bottom shaming as well of people. And you're like, well, the bottoms are the heroes of this. Of the gay world.
It seems so weird now, like now, in what I know now to think about some of this stuff, but you're exactly right. Bottom shaming, you know, you want to have a dick up where, you know, don't you know that that's meant to be a one-way street? You don't try to get an elbow up there. It's one direction only.
Well, we think of penetration as being a, or being penetrated as a particularly feminine quality, and that's where it's, I think that's where a lot of it stems from as well. It's a feminine act to be penetrated. And that's why, and as we've learned so much from society, is that feminine things are bad and they're not to be celebrated. And that's weakness. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, yeah. It took me a long time to realize. Before I was into fisting, I was only ever a bottom, and it took me a long time to kind of realize, as the bottom, you're the one in charge for just having anal sex. For me, there was kind of so much tied up in just being clean as well. When I started having sex, about this horrendous fear about in order to be a bottom, people are going to know that I've been like trying to get shit out of my hole to get it clean. But then also that I don't know about you guys, but I had a really big fear about having sex and being dirty, during that took a long time for me to get over. And the same thing when I started fisting. When I, as I progressed with playing with toys over the last few years, my cleanouts have gotten a lot easier. But I had so many issues when I started.
Well, you're essentially hollow.
I know, it's like straight passage. We've unbent some of those curves that nature gave me to begin with. But I had a lot of issues with like dirty retained water that would come out, you know, mid play session, and I felt horrendous every time it happened because it was like, oh fuck, like I've shat on someone's hand yet again, like. What is wrong with me? Why can't I do this like everyone else seems to be able to?
I was thinking about this with a recent play session as well. Like, I mean, we've preached about this plenty of times before, but you know, it's not on anyone to shame someone because you know they've had a rough clean out. Mm. You know, you do this long enough, you understand. Like, you're playing in the sand pit, you're gonna get sand. But I really object to this word dirty as well. I've learned over the many years of doing this as well. I mean, I have, cause I'm an idiot. I say things like, oh, code brown, or, you know, like, oh, we've got a nugget, you know, and just make it just lighthearted and silly. And it's fine. It's this thing that we're going to deal with. And it's absolutely fine. I've had literally people just had a river of shit on me. And, you know, and they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, it's fine. It's okay. It'll be okay. What I really object to is the word, is the word or the phrase like, oh, you're a bit dirty.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's where it comes from. Yeah. That's where it belongs. Like, that's where the shit is from. I'm not dirty. I'm actually quite natural right now. What you're getting is the natural state right now. And if you are going to dig around deep in there, yeah, you might find something. You know, despite my best efforts cleaning. So can we really just stop shaming people with like, oh, you're dirty. Like, no, you're not dirty. You're just, you know, we've got a surprise guest during this play session.
That's totally natural. I remember Jazz talking in a previous episode kind of saying like a good Australian, if he finds a little nugget, he squirrels it away and, you know, doesn't say anything. Yeah. And that's very much what I do as well. It's when kind of, you know, when there's a smell, it's hard. But one of the phrases that some of my partners use, which I found really comfortable, is if things are, you know, not entirely the way that we need to continue, just saying, oh, you might need to have a bit of a wash. You might need to have another little wash or something like that. But I think it's bundled up so much as well in fisting and some of the shame that people have as they begin to get into this kink, because you almost feel like you have to justify yourself when you're explaining to someone who's not a fister that you are a fister, because immediately you know they're going to, well, you must be into scat as well, which, you know, if that's you're into, that's totally fine. But I think a lot of us feel like we have to justify ourselves in terms of, I'm into fisting, but I'm not into scat. And that's also putting our own shame on someone else's kink as well. But because we're digging around in kind of an area that's traditionally, you know, dirty, and even thinking about rimming, like for a lot of people, rimming's really kinky because you've got, you know, your mouth in someone's anus where they have bowel motions come out of. And this is next level. And then also the impact of, and as someone who was into medicine, like I was in medicine long before I got into fisting. But the other thing that I struggled with was this idea of wanting to stretch my hole in a way that my body wasn't engineered for or designed for, or the way that kind of nature had set up my organ system. And I think especially for me, it was stretch as I began to play and stretch out my second hole. And I've had a lot of people ask me whether I have issues with continence as well when they see some of the stuff that I that I do, and sort of the size of toys that I play with. And I don't have any issues at the moment. I know there are some people who do.
Only when you sneeze.
although after fisting, oh god, I pee like 18 times every hour after a big session for all that prostate irritation.
Oh, during, we've seen.
Yes, love to pee during.
It's
that feeling of completely letting go when you're getting fisted that I love.
That was a big shame thing for me. Like, I had to get over the shame of, like, peeing in front of people. Like, I had to get over that as well.
I love piss. I love it so much. I probably don't put that out there as much as I should, but yeah, I love some nicely hydrated urine as well. But that was a big thing for me, and I don't know whether you guys had any experience when you were fisting about thinking about what you were doing to your body. Was that kind of ever anything that came up for you guys?
Certainly. But I got over it pretty quickly, I guess, because it felt so good. And I thought, well, I can't not do it. So
yeah, yeah.
Might as well just enjoy the ride.
And that was what happened for me as well. You know, every time I would throw out all these toys and say, I must never, ever do this again, the urge would come back in this way that it's like, I can't ignore this. This is not going away. It's taken me a long time to kind of acknowledge this. But what I'll say is I didn't have... A lot of the sexual experiences I had in my early 20s were not easy, and toys have been this kind of safety blanket for me, where toy play sessions, especially if I'm playing by myself, feel safe. And I still...
Yeah, I get that too, definitely.
And I still sometimes get a lot of anxiety before I meet with someone to play with the first time, which is something I'm ongoing getting used to.
On that note, I think let's take a break and listen to some sponsors. This episode is sponsored by Kink 3D.
Chastity has exploded in popularity in the past few years, and Kink 3D is a huge part of that. They're the company behind the Cobra, the distinctive slick black and pink cages that are all over your Twitter feeds.
It used to be that Chastity came in a few pre-made sizes. Kink 3D changed the game by making it possible for just about anyone to be locked up comfortably without the need for custom ordering. They have a huge range of sizes with over 15 options for the cage, so it doesn't matter if your cock is big or small, thick or skinny, they can find the right fit for you. Kink 3D's 3D printed cages are discreet, so you can wear it at work, and also incredibly lightweight and durable, so you can wear it at the gym, running, hiking, or just about anything else you like to do.
Plus, if you've been curious about caging or upgrading your device, the new year is a great time to start. Kink 3D has a limited time offer where you can get a free bottle of their special cage cream, their collab with Leather Daddy, when you order a new Cobra Chastity kit to make locking up even more frictionless. Just go to kink3d.com/fun to set yourself up with a new cage. That's K-I-N-K, then the number 3, then the letter D.com/FFUN. That's double fun.
Kink 3D has all the info you'll need and some of the best customer service out there. You can also follow them online on Twitter and Reddit, where you can see people of all different shapes and sizes showing off while being locked. So check out kink3d.com and see for yourself why they are the hottest name in chastity. We're back with Hungerisms. Tell us about your collaboration with Hanky's Toys in order to create this prolapse toy. What was the process of molding your prolapse?
Okay, so molding the prolapse is kind of funny. I've been mostly sworn to secrecy on this topic, but I feel like it's been out long enough that I can kind of go into details about it a little bit. Basically, we didn't do a traditional mold, obviously, because I can't like dip my prolapse into like a fucking whatever they do the castings with, like. And so I submitted like hundreds and hundreds of photographs of my prolapse to them, like 3D video, you know, videos of every direction and whatever. And they did a 3D sculpt basically of my prolapse, and it's identical. It's might as well have been a casting, because I've actually held it up next to it, and like they look freakishly similar. So they put their best designer on the project, and like he kept sending me drafts as time went on, like of like how much, you know, and then I petitioned for them to add hair to the base. So there's actually like the base of the toy is actually my butthole. And then and so there's actually hair details on it that I they were originally not going to use. But I was like, no, like it's kind of my trademark. Like my hairy ass has always been kind of my thing. So I wanted the hair on the base, and they were afraid it was going to look too cartoony, but it didn't. It turned out really nice. And then, yeah, so I went through maybe like a dozen sets of approvals by me before it was like I wanted more vasculature added to it. Like I wanted more veins and more just, you know, little details to make it look more realistic.
More fucked up.
Huh? Just, more just fucked, more up. Fucked up. Exactly. I wanted it to be as like I wanted people to see it and just be like. So like, yeah, it turned out really great in the end. I remember when I first opened the package, when I first got the first shipment, and I only got like the small, medium, and large ones. I didn't get like the XL one, I don't think, initially. And I was like, oh, the little one is so cute. Like, it's like literally like, it's only like, it's like 5 inches, 5 or 6 inches tall. And so it's like, it's literally like a little bitty baby prolapse. And so like, so then when I finally saw the XL one, I was like, okay, that's where it's at. Like, it's a perfect replica of it. It mine's a little bit bigger in real life, but it's like, it's close to, this is something I forgot to mention in last week's episode, was that part of the reason that we shaped it the way that it was is because it couldn't follow the exact curvature of my prolapse, because it would have made it too easy to break inside of someone. And so it was too much of a liability to have the curve be as pronounced as it actually is. So it's more of like a kind of a softer curve than it really is in real life, but it's still a basically identical replica of my asshole.
Welcome back. Jazz, you've done quite a bit of reading lately on the topic of shame within sort of the larger gay and queer community. Do you want to just talk to us a bit more about that?
I have. I think it came at a really good time, because I've been questioning a lot of things for myself this year. And my husband gave me the book, and he's like, you think you're okay, you're not okay, read this. My husband, he's so critical. Oh my God. I think you're critical of me, but he is like 10 times worse.
I'm not critical. I like tease you. I like to tease you.
Yeah. See, teasing I can take. My husband is serious when he talks to me about my shortcomings, and it's very off-putting. Anyway, so he gave me this while he was simultaneously reading The Velvet Rage, which is a book that was written, I think, in the early
2000s. Yeah.
But this book that he gave me is called Straitjacket by Matthew Todd, and I think it was written in 2014. And it quotes The Velvet Rage quite a bit. The Velvet Rage being all about the reasons for the way we as gay people react to things sometimes. Quite negatively or over the top in terms of, well, for my husband, it's aggression when something doesn't go right. For me, there are other things there. But Straitjacket really unpacks this thing in a more modern context. So what is going on for us as, especially as gay men, as adults? We think that we don't have any gay shame anymore, but he claims that that is completely untrue. And that we've just covered it up with so many things, like even something simple as being quick-witted or being fit,
mm-hmm. yep.
or being bitchy, being better than you,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
sex addiction,
yep.
drug addiction, eating disorders, idolizing famous people, objectifying each other.
It's almost like growing up, I think there's a lot of us who... when we realized we were gay or we were different, when you live in a world where you feel different in kind of this big fundamental way, I think a lot of us kind of become hyper-conscious about the way that I present to the world is coming off as gay. You know, I'm the way I position, the way I hold my body, the way I've crossed my legs, the way that I talk, the way that I dress. I think a lot of us become so hyper aware of, if I present in this way, I'm going to come off as gay. And then if I come off as gay, because I'm not living in a gay world where everything's gay and lovely and happy all the time, I might be rejected by the people around me. I might not be safe. I might not have friends. So I become hyper aware of all the ways that I'm gay and think all the world is looking at me for looking for clues that I might be gay. And so if only I become this better person by becoming funnier or wittier or more interesting or having more things to talk about or becoming more muscular.
Or perfect,
then no one will worry kind of that I'm gay because I've made up for being gay because that's bad. And then sometimes after a while of that, people kind of go, all right, so I've got a good body and I've been working out and I'm funny and I'm witty and I've got a good job and I've worked really hard, but I still feel empty inside because I still feel like I'm covering up or making up for the fact that I was born gay.
Yeah. The thing that really got me from the book was sex addiction, or let's say having a lot of sex with a lot of people as a way to cope. And I'm not sex shaming anybody. I'm very sex positive, but he really delves into this quite deeply. And I didn't want to look at it for myself initially, but I forced myself to that we are having as many intimate sexual encounters as possible. But at the end of the day, when somebody walks out the door again, feeling just as lonely as we were before they came over. So unpacking that. Yeah, and sex addiction. I kind of hate to say it on this podcast because I think there's a lot to unpack there. And I don't want to say it just willy-nilly and then leave people hanging. But but that is explored a lot in the book.
My most recent job I've had for the last couple of years, which is working with 99% straight people, and the difference is so palpable. And the way in which I've noticed that I like to other myself as a coping mechanism. Like, I'm so much funnier than the rest of you. I'm so much wittier than you. I go to the gym. I care about my appearance more than you. I'm having better sex than all of you as well. Which, I think all these things are true.
Mm.
But I hold on to those things. Because really, at the end of the day, I know you don't look at me the same. I'm still this other object as well, this weird thing. So I'm going to do everything in my power to feel like I've got the upper hand on you as well. And it's all to deflect any criticism, any feeling of shame that you want to put on me. Because I know fundamentally, because I mean, I work in quite like a very rural area as well, or small town people as well. No, like outright like bigotry, anything like that. But just very like old fashioned ideas of things, you know, quite stereotypical views of how things are as well. Sort of like, what's this non-binary thing? I'm like, oh God,
yeah.
Linda.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of that, you know. So I feel like I'm othered, but also I'm guilty of doing it as well. Like, I'll play into it and I'm like, oh no, I am different. I am better than all of you as well. And I've noticed, and it's all coping mechanisms as well. And I have to do, which is just what we have to do to survive, really.
I think there's a large part for all of us where it's felt like we have to justify the fact that our life is different from many of the people that were around us as we were forming our sense of identity when we were, you know, an adolescent. It's been really interesting for me actually working in healthcare. Sometimes I see patients where they come from an environment that is overwhelmingly supportive and they feel accepted before they come out as gay or trans or whatever their identity is. And sometimes I kind of meet people and I think, I mean, when I was your age, I had a lot of issues, but you actually seem really well adjusted. Like, you seem, I'm kind of surprised. So I have to catch my own, I guess, judgments at some time because I think, how can you be coping with this so well and feel so comfortable in yourself? But they've also experienced a world that has accepted them maybe in a way that was different from, you know, 15 years ago. And I think all of this is overwhelmingly positive, but we also, you know, it's very varied amongst the world and amongst different populations of different towns. And the environment that we're in when we're forming our identity, we carry forward for the rest of our lives, no matter what. And I can't change kind of what happened when I was 15 or earlier, but it's something that I I quite truthfully feel like I'm only on my journey of being queer where now in my early 30s, I'm kind of beginning to look around going, okay, so I've done the career thing, I've done the body thing, I've worked out, I've looked after myself, but I still feel empty. And now I'm kind of doing that introspective thing of going, okay, so what are my values? Who am I? That's something that's starting for me now, like as a 31-year-old.
Yes.
Do you think you as a fister plays into that identity or helps with forming that identity, or is that sort of a compartmentalized thing?
I think me coming around to being a fister has helped me unpack a lot of just the general gay shame that I carried. Because for me to start to identify as a fister, I had to, even when I started fisting, I don't think I was really comfortable with being gay, to be honest. Through kind of the upbringing that I had and the anxieties that I had in my early 20s, it took a long time for me to begin to openly feel like I talk about fisting. And now, you know, when I kind of meet someone, I'm really open and upfront about it. Not if I'm going out to see like an aunt for a Lamington, but with other guys. And it has blown me away the number of people that I talk to who are open to the idea of fisting, who are into fisting, because even a few years ago, I felt like I was the only one in the fucking world who kind of felt this way. And I think fisting through social media and word of mouth and more people discovering and I think also people being less serious about it, because fisting to me used to be this thing that people didn't talk about. They didn't kind of disclose it to people who weren't into that crowd and into that group. Where now, like, I get on Grindr around here, and even just searching like the FF hashtag, there's a lot of guys who even just have it on their profile in a way that I think maybe wouldn't have felt comfortable doing that only a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just briefly, like, to pick up our listeners who maybe, like, some of whom may be thinking, yeah, but my story is different or more complex. And the reason for this is because I wrote about gay shame on my blog not so long ago, and some people of color did contact me and said, yeah, but you don't know what it's like for me, having grown up in a black household with a black family, and the combination of coming out as gay and then being a fister as well, there's so much more shame going on, and I feel like I'm left out by the community as well. So I just want to acknowledge that and say that for the three of us, it's not something that we can really delve into because we don't have that experience. But I just want to acknowledge there that your experience is valid and deserves to be spoken about.
I mean, we can talk endlessly about, you know, the topic of shame as gay and queer people, and Lord knows there's enough other podcasts and media on the topic. So I guess as we kind of move into like our final part of this episode, is just really kind of hone in perhaps kind of the shame that we put on ourselves within the fisting community and some of the shame we feel externally as fisters in particular, not just as kinky people or gay people, but just as fisters as well. Because I've definitely, I mean, just my own experience, I still, you know, and in some of the spaces that we've got to travel in over the last couple of years as well, I have noticed there's still this, it's kind of weird where I feel like fisting is kind of like, it's kind of had this renaissance as well, where kind of all the cool kids are fisting now. Like, it's cool to have a loose hole, but it's still, I think within the pantheon of kinks, I think it's still kind of slightly looked down upon as well, and it is still this thing like, yeah, but you're doing stuff that's still unnatural, and you're warping and doing things to your body that's just not really, I'm using air quotes, natural, as well. So I know I still feel that as well from a lot of other kinks and kinksters as well. Not from everyone. Most people are very cool or like, I wish I could do that, but I just don't have the constitution. But yeah, I don't know about how you guys have, how you feel about that.
I definitely still feel that way in a lot of ways. And let's imagine something like cycling versus running. So running, you put your runners on and you go for a run. Cycling, like, you've got to have a bike, you've got to have a helmet, you've got to have shoes, you've got to have kind of all this stuff to package up with it. For fisting, you can't just like jump in and fist whenever you want to. There's preparation that's involved. There's thinking about what have I eaten the day before that might impact my ability to fist later today. Because this is like what we're doing is so intimately tied with our body function and with feces as well. And there's continually this kind of digging around the fact that this is not a kink that if you've got a complete aversion to shit, it might be right for you because shit happens all the time.
I mean, we mentioned obviously shaming, you know, people, you know, for clean outs in the moment. I've noticed a real trend within the community as well. And, you know, Twitter always has a lot to answer for with this. And it's sort of this trend as well, which we've inherited from other social media trends, where it's kind of looking back on ourselves like 5, 10, 15 years ago as well. And it's a lot of people kind of looking back on, I mean, obviously now we're at the point where sort of we video a lot of ourselves as well. And people looking back on themselves from say 10 years ago and go, oh my God, look how tight I was. God, wasn't I pathetic? I'm such a newbie. This is, look at me just taking one solitary fist, you know, to the wrist. What was I doing, you know? And I really despise this trend. And I think obviously it's for, you know, for people that are new into this kink as well. They must feel so horrible coming into it. Like, you know, think like, well, clearly I'm not anyone until I can get two hands on me or to the elbow or beyond as well. You know, it's, I really worry what we do to kind of newbies in this kink. And, you know, I mean, the three of us, you know, we're all quite well-versed in this now, to different degrees. But it really upsets me when I see people do that to themselves. Because you think, like, well, what you're really saying is just having a tighter hole is bad as well. And yeah. This, look, and we've said this time and time again, if you can get one fist in you to the wrist, that's it. You're in this club. That's it. That's the only requirement to this as well. So kind of shaming people that, you know, can't get double punched is just gross and disgusting.
Absolutely.
And I always think as well, like, I just think, you know, more broadly speaking, you know, when people do these like things of like, hey, this is me 28 versus 18. Ugh, look at me there. Look how garbage I am. Ugh. And it's like, no, you 10 years ago were probably doing the best that you could. You know, I think of myself 10 years ago and I just think, oh God, I wish I could just give you a hug and go, it's going to be okay. You know, like, and I think in every, you know, measurable sense, you know, financially, physically, you know, sexually, you know, I'm doing so much better than I was 10 years ago. But I do always think, well, that version of me was doing the absolute best that they could as well. And I really hope people have that attitude towards themselves as well. Like, don't think, yeah, just because you've made huge leaps in your fisting, which by the way, not everyone can. Some people will just plateau at a certain level, and that is more than okay. But just don't put all this shame on you, because do you know what? That shame you put on that younger, less experienced version of yourself, that just seeps out to everyone as well. And then people see that shit online and they think, well, I'm clearly never going to... And I see people turn away from this kink a lot now because they feel like it has to be the Olympics of fisting now.
Yeah. Exactly right.
They're not interested in all these milestones. And now, well, I've done double. Now we're going for triple. Now we're going past the elbow. And now we're doing this. And they just want it to be fun and enjoyable.
Yeah.
Not this, well, I have to be hitting certain numbers to be able to qualify into this.
And this is the key. This is the key.
And I've been guilty of this myself, you know. I felt this myself because when I, you know, when I started making videos, it just was meant to be fun. It just was meant to be fun. I loved watching my hole get fucked. The reason I started making videos was I used to set up like a webcam on my laptop so I could watch myself playing with toys because I just loved watching things go in and out of my hole while I was playing. And over time, there's been so many times when I've looked at what I'm doing on Twitter and the videos I'm making, and because I wanted to make things that were gorgeous, I guess, or like toy videos that were fun and weren't kind of packaged up in that bundle of this is something wrong and you shouldn't be doing this and you should be hiding this. But there is...
This is where you and me connect, really. We both have this kind of more playful aesthetic that we like to, enjoy. Well,
without play. None of the dark fisting is serious. Toys are serious. Like, they're toys. Like, play. But I look at some of the stuff I've done and it became so hyper... edited and so hyper like perfect that it lost some of the fun for me at times. And I have there are so many times when I have looked at what I'm doing and gone, is this actually like, is Twitter and making toy videos actually a net positive in my life, or is this actually just I'm so hyper editing, hyper creating this perfect kind of like aesthetic in a way that I judge people for when they do it on Instagram, because I don't use Instagram, but that's exactly what I've been doing on Twitter. And that plays into people needing to feel like in order to be part of the club, they have to take a dildo that's 15 inches or be able to take doubles or be able to take double punches or be working onto triples and not part of the club just...
Or have a purpose-built sex room or...
Or know. Have a purpose-built sex room. Yeah, that's absolutely, absolutely. And I've been so guilty of this myself. And I'm now at a point where I'm really just... I took a bit of a break this year, but... starting to relax and not try to create something that's perfect. Because to like 99% of my toy videos are, I just set up a camera because I love watching my hole get fucked. And if something happens to like be a shareable clip from that, then I get off on sharing it. Like I get off on the exhibitionism of it. But I know a lot of people who also feel like, oh, unless I've got like the perfect 20-second edited clip of the moment when everything looked like I'm having better sex than anyone else in the world and I'm having the more intense play session than anyone else in the world. Well, you've missed out on the 3 hours of all of the disasters that happened to that point and the dildos falling over and you had to go back and have another wash because things were not right and the awkward kind of like, the partner and I are trying to like figure out what's going on here. Like, you don't get any of that on Twitter. You get an 8-second clip that someone who's jacking off scrolls by while thinking, oh, well, everyone else around me is having the best sexual experiences of their life while I'm sitting at home by myself having a wank, not living my best life.
We're going to take a break and here are some ads.
Hey, you. Come and peer into our Top Toys toy chest. We're reading out reviews by some seriously satisfied Top Toys customers.
Here's what one happy customer had to say about the Spike.
Spike me, baby. Like most quality depth toys, the Spike 105 starts out meekly invading you, worming its way inside in a non-threatening way. But as you progress down its length, it gradually widens and you begin to feel increasingly the pronounced ridges as you travel towards the base.
Both of those sensations inform you without a doubt that this toy seeks to impel you. At some point you realize it's entering through the second sphincter as it continues to widen and stretch you.
The combination of one sphincter being entered while simultaneously providing a significant stretch at the other is disorientingly delicious. Just when you think you've reached your limit, it pulls you to its base, locks inside you, and has explored you even deeper than you thought it could.
I've managed with time and practice to keep it inside while walking around for short periods. Alas, I haven't been able to silence the constant moaning while doing this. Top Toys is made from 100% body-safe, platinum-cured silicone, catering for people of all levels of experience.
They offer clear, easy-to-understand sizing guides so that you know the toy you're buying is right for you. Top Toys is also a proud, queer-owned and operated business.
Go to toptoys.com where you can shop their entire toy range, as well as fisting accessories like gloves, play sheets, X-Lube and branded apparel.
Fist tees for fist lovers like you.
Check out the original handmade fisting t-shirt designs from camarados.com.
Super subtle designs so you can wear them at work or at the gym without everyone realizing you're a fucking giant fist slut.
Except for your fellow fisters, of course. Think of them as a red hanky for the next generation.
Go to camarados.com, that's camarados.com, and use discount code SUCHFUN, all one word, for a 10% discount.
That's right, fellow piggies. Piggies.
Welcome back to Such Fun.
Some final thoughts. I just want to say, I mean, for me, I suppose I'm in a bit of a unique situation, I think. Fisting brought me out of a lot of the shame I felt, just as a human being, as a gay person, as a queer person. I was never a muscle Mary. I was never the most attractive. I was my close-knit circle of friends, so most of the friends I have from art school, and they're all incredibly talented individuals and have for the most part all kept up with doing creative things since leaving uni, and I didn't. Like in my 20s, I always felt like the lame duck amongst them as well. So I felt this sense of shame that I hadn't kept up creatively. As well. So I carried that with me for all of my 20s, just feeling like a general failure. And getting into this kink, and then that kink inspiring me to do the artwork that I've done, and then obviously then doing this as well, and this being a success as well, it's given me something, it's given me a niche within my circle of friends. It's given me a thing like, that I'm successful at. That I do better than nobody else. No one else is doing that, and that has given me such a sense of confidence. So when I am in environments where I don't feel confident, where I think, okay, who's going to look at me? I think, well, I know that I'm good at this. I know that I have this. I have this power. There's this thing that I'm very good at, and I'm good at helping other people and inspiring other people at as well.
And it's not just a reaction. It's not just a reaction to your gay shame. It's not just you trying to be a perfectionist or you trying to prove that you're better than everybody else. It's something that you actually care about and are good at, yeah, and are trained in doing. And that is authentic.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think even my mother can be proud of that. If my son's going to be a dirty fucking pig, he's going to be a successful one.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to wrap up, like how you guys kind of connect with fisting and shame, like,
yeah,
right here, right now.
I mean, I've got to be honest, for me, it's still a journey that is continuing, and I feel so much more comfortable about fisting and what I do now compared to a few years ago. But for me, it's still an ongoing journey. And I think the most important thing that I just kind of want to communicate to anyone who's out there listening is we all are sort of at different stages on this journey. And it might be that you're well ahead of where I am. It might be that you're me a few years ago. But remembering that all of this, everything we do is about fun and pleasure and play, is far more important than anything else. And what we're doing is not hurting anyone else. We get such tremendous pleasure from it. And I think we do have an increasingly great community all over the world over time, that people are becoming more accepting. And to remember that we're here to play and have pleasure and have fun. And that, more than anything else about whole goals or feeling like you need to do fisting in a particular way or show off in a particular way, just coming back to all of this being about play and pleasure and fun, and that's why we're here. And let's just keep doing that, because we've got a wonderful little secret that we've discovered that the rest of the world is yet to, and that is fisting is fucking fantastic.
And anyone that tries to shame you is secretly jealous. That's my theory.
Happy fisting, everyone.
Happy fisting.
Happy fisting.